Good afternoon. Welcome to the end of week 7. And the second lecture on syntax, the topic that you're all going to start loving soon. Yes. Okay. So there's more on grammar today, or on syntax, on structuring sentences, on the parts of sentences. In fact, I'm going to repeat quite a few things, or elaborate on a few things that I already introduced last time. So you're not going to get massively new information, masses of new information today, but I'm hoping to clarify a few concepts as well. Okay. Let's see how long it takes today until I have to say something about noise. I'll just continue till that happens. Okay, now, as you know, there is an assignment that everyone needs to do. Do you really want me to say something about silence already at sort of after a minute, or can we postpone it a little bit? There is an assignment which is obligatory for everyone who is doing a BA or BEd degree course with us, which is going to be the large majority of people here. It is not obligatory for people who are doing this as a sort of revision from their, who are part of the Alte Studiengänge. It will be uploaded to StudIP for everyone to download next week. At the beginning of next week, I'm aiming for that. And then there will be a good week, at least, to hand it in. I will make sure that I send an email out to everyone. Everyone will get an email at their University of Trier email address, telling them that it's there for you to download. This actually allows me to make a point, which I don't think I've made before here, to this particular group. We sort of assume that you are reading your University of Trier email. I know a lot of you will be using WebDE or GMX or whatever, and that's fine. If you write to me from your GMX address, I will write back to your GMX address. I have no problems with that whatsoever. But you will get certain pieces of information that are directed at perhaps larger groups, or if you've never written to me and I need to write to you for whatever reason, you will receive that email to your official University of Trier address. If you don't read it and therefore miss something important, tough luck. Okay? I have absolutely no sympathy there. It's your responsibility to read your email, and in fact, there is a way to forward the email to your regular email address. Check online. There is a way to do this. I can't tell you offhand now how to do it, but there is an easy way to do this. Yes, I know you get a lot of email that you don't want. A lot of students don't read the verteiler and things like that. That's fine. Just filter it out if you don't want it, but you need to access your regular email at your University of Trier email address. Anyway, end of sermon. This assignment is obligatory, as I said. You need to hand it in order to be allowed to do the exam. Okay? We're supposed to force you to do this. Okay? If you've done, for whatever reason, if you're retaking this course, and if you're a BA or BEd student, if you've done this previously in the previous year, you don't need to redo it again. It's just those people who are now in their first semester or who, for whatever reason, in a later semester take this course for the first time. Okay? There will be information on the assignment on how to submit it. I'm still debating whether I should try online submission again. I did this the first year and that cost some technical difficulties. Last year I did it in paper format, so that you had to submit it in paper, sort of print out to my secretary. We'll see. You'll find the information on the assignment. Okay, those were all the announcements that I had to make for today. So I think we can straight go into doing some linguistics. Okay, what did I do in the last lecture? I introduced phrases. I introduced noun phrases, verb phrases, adjective phrases, preposition phrases, etc., etc. I also told you about clauses. I gave you brief definitions for the two, but you may still find that you are a little bit unsure about what the difference is, how to distinguish between them, and also how to find out where a particular clause starts or where a particular phrase starts and where it ends. This is what we're going to cover today. Okay. In addition, I made the point that hierarchy is an extremely important word. It's a word that is important because it is it's a way to capture the structure of sentences. Okay? And by capturing the structure of sentences, you can see who does what. Of course, it's not who, but it's certain parts of the sentence that have particular functions, like subject, object, etc. And I also introduced briefly, or I mentioned it at least, the concept of constituent, a word or sequence of words dominated by a single node in the tree, so that everything which is under the tree, and everything, not just part of it, is dominated by this particular node, and therefore belongs together on one level of the tree. Okay. And we also saw that phrases can contain clauses, and in fact, clauses of course contain phrases, so it's not, it can be both. And there can be more phrases and within clauses, etc. It can be quite complex, and there can be a very large or very elaborate structure of sentences. Okay. We're not going to go into sort of many, many levels, but I mean, I guess you already saw the point that there can be a subclause within a subclause within a subclause. Okay, so what are we doing today? We are looking more at... Yes, there's a question. Okay.
And we're talking about clauses. So
yeah.
We have subordinate clauses and main clauses. And this is in a sentence where both of them are exist. So does that mean that every sentence, even if it has no subordinate clause, can be called main clause?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. It doesn't really make much sense to talk about the main clause when you don't have anything that is subordinate to it. But yes, in fact, what I'm going to introduce today, but it's the same context, is, and that's the word also that Bas Arts uses, matrix clause. Okay, but that's basically the same as main clause. I'll come exactly to those kind of things later on in the lecture. If it's still unclear, let me know afterwards. Okay? Good. So I'll give you ways of identifying phrases, okay? So what exactly is a phrase, or how do I determine where it starts and where it ends? I'll give you more on clauses. We'll look at the different types of clauses, and I'll give you some practice to do. Okay? There will be some sort of mini homework for next time, in the sense that I'll be asking you to try and draw a tree of one particular sentence. Okay? We will then look at this even more, in even more detail, but I'll also then start thinking about variation and how syntactic structure varies in different text types, for example. Good. Let's start with this one. This is just to lighten up things a little bit. I miss the good old days when all we had to worry about was nouns and verbs. Yeah. I'm not quite sure what else they're worrying about right now, but you'll be worrying about more than nouns and verbs, so I thought I'd start with that. Okay. Good. Let's make one important point that I made last week again, namely that of hierarchy and structure. And I'd like to make this by looking at the huge cheese factory. Okay. Why is it important to talk about structure or about hierarchy here? Well, what could it mean, the huge cheese factory? It could mean the huge cheese factory in the sense that it's a factory that manufactures huge blocks of cheese. Okay. Or, in fact, it's a huge company that happens to manufacture cheese. So, this is just to make the point, what goes with what? What belongs where in the sentence, and what modifies what, and what describes what, etc., actually may have an impact on the interpretation of what's going on. And I will give you sentences later on, not today, but next week, which are actually ambiguous because there are two ways of looking at the structure of the word, of the sentence. Okay. Right, what is a phrase? Well, in everyday lay meaning, layperson's meaning, you may find a definition like a sequence of words shorter than a sentence. Yes, that will cover pretty much everything, but it doesn't really help you. Most people also talk about phrases that have some sort of special meaning. Some people use it as something like idiom or fixed phrase or something like that. But that's not the technical linguistic meaning. I would like to propose something written by Jeffrey Leach as a sort of basic idea or basic definition. A grammatical unit which may consist of one or more than one word and which is one of the classes of constituent into which simple sentences can be divided. So there are words in there which we've had before, we've heard before, constituent. Okay. And we've got the idea that they form part of sentences. Okay. Well, this needs exemplification, I think. Okay. Mr. Smith's donkey was working very hard in the factory. Okay. Which parts of the sentence go with other parts? I could now set you to do this, but I think I'll just let you know what I think belongs together. I think you would agree with me that the belongs to factory. No? So the determiner and the noun which it determines go together. Mr. goes with Smith. And in some way, the and Mr. seem to perform similar functions. No? Was goes with working. Very goes with hard. No? Very hard. I mean, the very seems to say something about hard, how hard it is. Okay, and we intuitively feel that they belong together. But then we also have things that seem to go sort of both ways. In goes with factory, but also with working. Goes in the sense of there is some relationship. And the apostrophe S seems to have something to do with Mr. Smith, but then it also has importance for the donkey. Okay. So maybe we can come to the conclusion that altogether Mr. Smith's donkey seems to be a phrase, and the rest of the sentence is made up of two or three linked phrases, but how isn't quite clear. We need more accurate ways of dealing with this, and that's what I would like to give you the equipment for. How do we detect phrases? Now, there are a number of tests that you can apply to find out whether something is or is not a phrase. And there are four of them that I would like to mention today in today's lecture. Okay. These are good rules of thumb rather than 100% rules, in the sense that if all four of them can be applied, then you can be pretty sure that, yes, this is a phrase. But there are sometimes, I mean, language is not always behaving the way we expect, there are sometimes cases where these rules may not 100% work. But still, in most cases, they are very useful. Okay. And they are the substitution test, the movement test, the coordination test, and the question test. Sometimes the question test is called the sentence fragment test, and you'll find out later why. Okay. I'd like to run through those tests with you in a bit more detail now. Good. Well, the substitution test basically asks the question whether there is something, or whether the thing which we believe is a phrase can be substituted with something else. Okay. Can we replace it? Can we replace it and are then still left with a sentence that makes sense? Makes sense in the grammatical sense. Okay. Remember last time we had the sentence, colorless green ideas sleep furiously. That also makes sense grammatically, although semantically, in terms of meaning, it doesn't really make any sense at all. If you can take it and replace it, then it's very, very likely a phrase. Okay? Or let's just say it is a phrase then. Okay. Can you replace Mrs. Smith's donkey? Well, yes, very easy, aren't you? He, she, or it. Well, it probably, but if you like to think of the animal as a he or as a she, you might want to do that. Okay? It was working very hard in the factory. Okay? Now that suggests that these three words or four words, well, we talked about counting words before, but let's just say these three words here seem to belong together in such a way that you can say they form a phrase, or constituent, and in this case, a phrase. Okay? Can you replace in the factory? You can't replace it with he or it or she, but you can, of course, very easily say there. Okay? So, Mr. Smith's donkey was working very hard there. And again, that suggests that in the factory is a phrase. It's a different kind of phrase. We will call this a preposition phrase because there is a preposition at the beginning, which is the most important word. And here with Mrs. Smith's donkey, we will call this a noun phrase. Okay. Can you have a quick look at those four sentences and see whether you can come up with ways of replacing them, of substituting for them. What about the first one? Can you substitute it? Challenging this problem? Anyone? What could you substitute it with? Yeah? Sorry? With it, yeah, or... progress is being made in it, in... yeah?
This,
exactly, yes. I think that's in it, yeah, in this, okay? Progress is being made in this. This suggests that challenging this problem is a phrase, or is a constituent. Okay. What about... cherry tree is? No, okay. My is in full bloom. No, sorry, the is. No, my would work is in full bloom. I might actually be able... No, even that one not, because my is still there. But as soon as the is added, no, you can't find a word, you can't find anything that replaces cherry tree is. Okay. Now, you would have felt that this is not a unit. Yeah. But sometimes these replacement tests can actually tell you something that will be, well, more difficult to feel intuitively. Okay. Psychologists mind their own business. Their own business, can you replace it? It or that or something like that, yes. No matter whether they are right or wrong, I'm sure you agree with me, that doesn't really work in terms of finding a word that replaces those elements. So, I mean, this is in a way very trivial. Okay. But it's a very powerful way, particularly when we talk about longer phrases that may contain more elements in the hierarchy. Can you replace the whole thing with a single word? Like, for example, I like cheese that has been produced in Switzerland, which we all know is a great place to go skiing in. I like it. It replaces everything. And if I just replace one bit of it, we are left with something that doesn't fit anymore. So that means I need to replace everything after I like with it, and that suggests everything after I like is, in fact, a phrase. This was probably complicated without seeing the sentence. I will upload exercises that make you use the substitution test, and that should then become clear. Okay, let's look at the movement test. Well, as you expect with this name, it's about whether you can move elements in a sentence to somewhere else, and if you can, then what you think is a phrase is a phrase. Okay? So, he will set out his personal philosophy to the electorate. Can you think about whether any of these are phrases or not? Or, in other words, can you think about whether it is possible to move any of these in the sentence to somewhere else, which would then prove that they are phrases, that they are constituents? Well, let's try with the first one. He will set out his personal philosophy to the electorate. I can move that. I can move it to one word before. He will set his personal philosophy out to the electorate. Okay. Sort of acceptable. But I cannot do this with his personal. He will set his personal out philosophy to the electorate. Yeah, doesn't work. Which suggests that his personal philosophy together forms a phrase, and his personal on its own is not a phrase. It's not a complete phrase. So, his personal philosophy is a phrase, his personal alone is not a phrase. Okay, can we move to the electorate? Well, yes, I can move it to the front, for example, and I can say to the electorate, he will set his personal philosophy out. It's odd to have this sentence like that on its own, but I might do this because I want to contrast it with something else. Okay. It's grammatically okay. But you'll agree with me that I cannot say to the, he will set his personal philosophy out electorate. Yeah, of course. Okay. Electorate, he will set his personal philosophy out to the? Nah. Okay? So again, it's not really rocket science. It's very easy to do these tests. So that suggests only to the electorate is a phrase. Alright? Let's do the next test. That's the coordination test. Well, first of all, we need to settle on what coordination is. Well, it means that we link to elements, and usually we link to elements that are on the same level of hierarchy to each other. Yeah. And we use coordinating conjunctions for this, and, or, and but. Yeah. This can usually, and here I write usually because there are exceptions, but this can usually only be done if they are complete units. Yeah. And complete units means if they're phrases. In fact, also clauses, but we're concerned with phrases now. So, if something can be coordinated easily with each other, then, and they are of the same type, then this is a good reason to believe they are real phrases. You realize that this is phrased a bit more carefully, a good reason to believe. Now, this is one of the tests which doesn't always 100% help you, but I'd say 95-98% probably. Okay, let's try this. He will set out his personal philosophy to the electorate. Can we coordinate anything with to the electorate? Or can we coordinate anything with the electorate? Let's try. And I think you agree with me that this is very easy. He will set out his personal philosophy to the electorate and to the party. Which suggests that the things that are in red are phrases. And again, in this case, it'll be a preposition phrase because to is a preposition. Can we do this with the electorate alone? Well, yes. To the electorate and the party. So on the lower level, we can actually coordinate those two noun phrases. Now, yes, I agree that there is some kind of implied to there as well. But structurally, both are possible. Okay. Those seem okay. Therefore, both sequences of words that we queried are phrases. Okay. Is out his a phrase? You probably already intuitively feel that the answer is no. He will set out his and up their vision of the good society. Ugh. Yeah? Doesn't really work. Clearly not. Yeah? That suggests it's not a phrase. Alright? Next test. I lost count. Are we at three or at four? Three? I think at three, four. Well, we'll see. Okay. Does the candidate phrase, the thing that we want to know about whether it is a phrase or not, sound okay when it is standing alone, when it is the answer to a question? Okay. If that's true, it's a phrase. Or if that's correct, or if that's the case, then it's a phrase. He will set out his vision of the good society. Okay, we'll stay with politics. Again, we can ask questions about whether any of these are phrases. His vision of the good society, and his vision. Now, if I just gave you this list, you would probably intuitively feel that his vision belongs together and is therefore a phrase. But that's actually not the case. Okay? And it's important that you realize why. Okay? Here's the sentence. Here is one possible question. What will he set out? And you can then answer, well, his vision of the good society. Which suggests that his vision of the good society is a phrase. Again, it's a noun phrase. What will he set out his vision of? Huh? Maybe a little bit of an awkward question, but perfectly fine grammatically. The good society is the answer, which suggests that the good society, just as much as his vision of the good society, is a phrase. Again, it's a noun phrase. Now, what will he set out of the good society? His vision. No, right? That doesn't work. What will he set out of the good society? I've got another er here. Okay. Why is that? Because, well, what's the phrase? His vision of the good society. If we just take his vision out, then of the good society is left behind. Because if you were to draw a tree, then somewhere on top of all of this, there will be one single node which dominates everything. And if we just look at this, then there is not one single node that just dominates this. Well, of course his vision can be a phrase in another context. His vision was great. Then his vision is a phrase. But here we have his vision of good society, and that belongs together. All right? Those were the four tests. Okay, I found my count again. Good. One-word phrases. I've already mentioned that some phrases actually consist of only one phrase, one word. How can that be? It seems like a contradiction in terms, particularly if you take the layperson's view of a phrase, which sort of assumes that there are more words per phrase. How can this be the case? Well, let's look at the substitution test again. We looked at the animal, which was working very hard in the factory. Well, let's give that animal a name. Let's call it Theodore. Okay. Theodore was working very hard in the factory. We can still replace Theodore with he or it. Okay. It's the same slot. Of course, we can have a larger noun phrase, a more complex noun phrase in it, but we can also just have a name or, in fact, a pronoun. Okay. You'll agree with me that this is a unit, probably. Was working very hard in the factory. It's a verb phrase. Okay. It's a verb phrase which consists of many words. Well, quite a few. Okay. But, of course, we can also have verb phrases which consist of only one word. And I think we already saw the girl stumbled. Okay, stumble is only one word, but it's still a verb phrase. Mr. Smith's donkey smells. Smells is a verb phrase. And this is why Leach wrote that a phrase is a grammatical unit which may consist of one or more than one word. Just to show this to you in a bit more detail, Eric was very unhappy. Poor Eric. Yeah. But poor Eric is still, well, poor Eric, then we already have more than one word. But if it's just Eric, it's a phrase. It's a noun phrase. Eric the hedgehog was very unhappy. Or Eric the giant bristly hedgehog was very unhappy. Good old Eric, the giant bristly hedgehog, was very unhappy. In all these cases, we have a noun phrase. In fact, a noun phrase that's functioning as a subject. And what we also have in common with these in these cases is that Eric is the most important word. The role of Eric is consistent. The function of everything that's read here is always the same in the sentence. It's always the subject, no matter how complex it is. And the most important word is always Eric. That's why we call the most important word in a phrase the head word. So most of the phrases will intuitively have a most important word, okay? Like Eric in the noun phrase. A most important word in the sense that it's compulsory. Without it, the phrase wouldn't be there. Okay? And that's what we call the head word. And anything that you add to the head word sort of just adds to the head word. It gives additional information, whether it's a great hedgehog, or a tired, or an unhappy, or whatever. These elements are often called modifiers. And in fact, the head word and then the word class of the head word determines what kind of phrase it is. If we have a noun, as in Eric, then it's a noun phrase. If we have a verb, as in smells or stumbles, it's a verb phrase. And, well, so on. Adjective phrase and a preposition phrase. In a way, much of this I already said last week. But with things like that, it doesn't help. It doesn't hurt repeating. Let's have a quick look at the noun phrase in some more detail. Not a lot of detail. He will set out his vision of the good society. This is the same sentence that we had before, and in fact we have three noun phrases which I've bracketed with square brackets, and I've underlined the most important word. The most important word being he, vision, and society. Okay, twice we have a noun, once we have a pronoun. Noun phrases, and we've seen this already, can be substituted by pronouns, and in fact also, and this complicates matters a little, by determiners. I'll give you an example. Well, first of replacement by pronouns, Gordon Brown will speak to the electorate, okay, or he will speak to them, where personal pronouns replace or substitute for the noun phrase. But look at this one. Sheila didn't want the red jelly beans. Sheila didn't want any. Okay. Any also replaces or is a pro form for the noun phrase. But this is, let's say, less typical. Okay. You need to know the replacement by pronouns as a test for noun phrases. Yeah. And I think I've already made the point in the lecture before, but if I haven't, then I'll make it now, that pronouns are really not pronouns. They are pronoun phrases because they replace a whole phrase. Good, that was a bit on the noun phrase. Something on the adjective phrase. The very old man was happy. What I've done here is I've underlined old because it's the most important word, but I've included very old in the brackets. Why? Well, I can, for example, remove old, and then we are left with something which is not grammatical. The very man was happy. Yeah? The fact that I cannot remove part of a phrase or part of something suggests that everything together is a phrase. I cannot remove old without also removing the modifier. I can, of course, say the man was happy. So the whole adjective phrase needs to be removed or moved in order to remain, or in order for the sentence to remain grammatical. So very old would be dominated by one single note. Good. You'll get something to practice very soon. First, a few things on the preposition phrase. In fact, some people like to call it prepositional phrase. Okay. I prefer preposition phrase because we don't say nounal phrase. We don't say verbal phrase. Yeah. So things with "-ul at the end are often more things that have certain functions, etc. So I prefer preposition phrase, but you will see both in the literature. Prepositions usually have nouns, or rather noun phrases, behind them. Okay, so after 12 days, 12 days is a noun phrase, and the preposition is sort of the important word that requires them. Okay. In considerable trouble. Okay. Through dreadful adversity. Outside the jurisdiction of United States law. Notice that this last sentence here is in fact again a hierarchically structured, phrase. That this phrase is in fact a hierarchically structured phrase. We have a preposition with something that is needed by the preposition to make it complete, outside something. What is it? The jurisdiction of United States law. Okay. And then within this, we again have a preposition phrase with another noun phrase in the middle. And I cannot just remove the jurisdiction. I cannot say outside it of United States law. I could say outside it, but then the it replaces everything here on this level. I can also say outside the jurisdiction of it, and then it refers to United States law. Okay? Finally, the verb phrase. Wake up call. Verb phrase. Here you will find different definitions. This is again one of those cases where you will find different things in the literature. In this lecture, we will call the verb phrase the verb, or in fact the verb group when there are several verbs that belong together, plus whatever is required to make the verb phrase complete. So, if I say I smoke, then smoke is a complete verb phrase. But if I say I like cheese, then like is not the verb phrase, but like cheese is the verb phrase because we need something that's being liked. My sister married a German man in Rome last year. Well, married is the verb, but married a German man in Rome last year is the whole verb phrase, which is also sometimes referred to as predicate. Okay? We'll come back to what's necessary complements in a minute. Okay, conclusion one. It's not over yet. Yeah? Yes? It's a complete verb phrase, yes. Like cheese is the complete verb phrase. I is a noun phrase, which consists only of a pronoun. Like cheese is the complete verb phrase. And like is the kind of verb, I'll say something about this in a minute, that cannot stand on its own. You can't say, I like. Now you need something that is being liked. Okay. So, conclusion of important points. We have phrases. They are groups of only one. Well, group of one is odd, but groups of one or more words that belong together grammatically. Okay. There are various tests, and I included four of them in my lecture today. They come in various types. Okay, we've got noun phrases, verb phrases, etc. And they are determined by what is sort of notionally the most important word, which is also the compulsory word. You cannot leave it out unless you want to create an ungrammatical sentence. Okay. So, noun phrases, verb phrases, preposition phrases, adjective phrases. And we can talk about the structure of these phrases with respect to each other, and also maybe as embedded phrases, and then we're talking about the structure of a sentence. Okay. Now, this was all about phrases. Okay. Before the exercise, I would like to now tell you a little bit more about clauses. Okay. Typically, it's always dangerous if I start a sentence with typically, because then you know that there are exceptions, etc. But anyway, a clause is, it's also a grammatical unit. It's just as much a grammatical unit as a phrase is a unit, but it's on a different level. It's on a higher level. Remember the rank scale that I introduced. Word, phrase, clause, sentence. Okay? A grammatical unit that includes at minimum a predicate, so a verb phrase, and an explicit or implied subject. This may sound theoretical at the moment. I'll make this clear in a minute, or in the next 45 minutes. Okay. Usually, or the traditional, the standard, the most prototypical case of a clause is one that consists of a noun phrase and a verb phrase. So we're now one level up higher from phrases. We're now one level higher up on the rank scale. Notice that if I want to find out how many clauses there are, this is very easy. I just need to count the verbs. I need to count the full verbs. Okay. But we'll count clauses later on. So, let's go back to a sentence which I think I've used before. The girl heard that I blew the whistle, and how many clauses are there? Easy, two. Okay. Why? Because I have heard and I have blew. Okay. Which one is higher up in the hierarchy? We talked about this last time already. Well, the first one. It contains the second one. And the second one is therefore dependent on the first one. That's why we call it a dependent clause. Or, in fact, as you will hear more frequently perhaps, a subordinate clause. And I'll show you again why this is actually a dependent clause. So what's the other one clause? What's the other one called? Main clause is the term that you mentioned up there. Or, in fact, matrix clause. Or, you can say, independent clause. So, if you have the sentence, the girl heard that I blew the whistle, then the whole thing is the main clause. The whole thing is the matrix clause. And only what I've put here as sort of blue, with the bar, the blue bar, is the subordinate clause. Now, why is not just the girl heard the main clause? Because that, if I asked you before the lecture, would probably have been, from some of you, the answer, what's the main clause? Well, the girl heard. Well, why is that not the case? Because here is the kind of verb that requires something that is being heard. And the thing that's being heard is part of the verb phrase. So, me is part of the clause here with heard me. So, just as much as me is part of the clause, that I blew the whistle is also part of the main clause. By the way, and this is a silly joke, what do you call Santa's helpers? Ha ha ha, yes, okay. Very topical, right? Okay. Yes, there's a question. Sorry, you need to speak
up. Can words like heard or saw stand alone? For example, the girl heard as opposed to the girl was dead?
Yes, I mean, there are situations where you find verbs like that standing on their own in actual language use. Okay, I heard. Did you hear about the fact that, I don't know, someone got a prize? Yeah, I heard. Yeah, but then, notionally, what is heard is still there. It's not on the surface, but the verb is still a verb that expresses someone that hears and something that is being heard. Yeah? So we will still call this a verb that requires an object, even though it's not there. I know this is a contradiction, but yeah. But I'll come to that in a minute as well. Okay. How many clauses do we have here? Paris is the capital of France and Kuala Lumpur is the capital of Malaysia. Well, two. What's the hierarchy? Is it a main and a subordinate clause?
Both
exactly on the same level. They are on the same level, and therefore we call it not a subordinate clause. One of the two, Paris is the capital of France, Kuala Lumpur is the capital of Malaysia. Both can stand on their own, therefore, and there is a coordinating conjunction in the middle. So basically it's just two clauses that could stand on their own, and we'll call these compound sentences. Okay. So these are the three types. The first one is called a simple sentence, the second one's called a compound sentence, and the third one is called a complex sentence. A complex sentence because it's structurally more complex, because it contains things that are dominating other things, okay, on the clausal level. Notice, by the way, that length doesn't necessarily mean that it's more complex on the clause level. The compound sentence is a very simple sentence. It's just two simple sentences. Also, have a look at this one. The old man's fantastically rich mentor traveled to Malaysia every year. That's a simple sentence. It's a simple sentence because we have a noun phrase and we have a verb phrase. This is your standard clause. There is complexity, yes, but that complexity is not on the clausal level. We only have one verb. Okay, the exercise is drawing closer. In the last lecture, I introduced a few functions already. So far we've talked about form. Okay? Remember that one of the important things that I wanted you to distinguish between is the difference between form and function. Okay? If we talk about noun phrases, verb phrases, preposition phrases, etc., we talk about form. When we talk about things like subjects, objects, and others, we talk about function. Okay. Now, before I do this, I'd like to introduce, and this is, I'm sure, a distinction which many of you will already know or have got out of the reading, the difference between different types of verbs. The girl stumbled. We've seen this sentence before. The girl hurt me. The first sentence is a sentence where the verb really doesn't require anything. You can just stumble. Okay? Okay, you can stumble over something, but let's leave that. Or the girl, or the not the girl smells, the donkey smells. Okay? Okay, the girl smells too, but anyway. It's still a grammatically complete sentence. Okay, the girl hurt me. We need the me. Okay? The first one is an example of an intransitive verb. This is a term which you need to learn. If it's a verb that requires one object, it's a transitive verb. This is also a term that you need to learn. But that's not all. We also have sentences like this. The girl gave her sister a book. And you can see that we have a verb that's gave, and you've got two components in the verb phrase that are important. In fact, not important, they are necessary. Someone who receives something and something that is given. Yeah. These are so-called ditransitive verbs. Yeah. So in the first case, we have nothing. In the second, we have one element. And in the third one, we have two elements that are required in the verb phrase. No object in the first one, one object in the second one, and a direct and an indirect object in the third one. You need to think about this sort of metaphor which I use, that these are sort of things happening on stage. It's like the participants of a play. Now, they are required to make the sentence complete. Yeah. And in fact, verbs that are ditransitive typically express this concept of transfer. Yeah. Something is taken and transferred somewhere else. And we need the thing that's being transferred and the place, well, the person that receives the thing. Yeah. One exam question last year in the exam was to look at, I gave an example sentence, and the example sentence was, "Cry me a river." Yeah? Many of you will know the song. And I asked, what's special about this? And the correct answer would have been that cry is usually a verb that is intransitive. Yeah? The girl cried. The boy cried. Okay. But if I say cry me a river, then I'm using two elements behind crying. I make it into a ditransitive verb, and in fact, if you look at the meaning, it then turns out that what's expressed is an element of transfer. Some cry me a river, do some, well, of course, in a way, not literally, okay, metaphorically, but this is an example of a case where changing the syntactic structure or the syntactic behavior of a verb changed the meaning. Okay. And yes, this was a relatively difficult question, but I wanted people to realize, or wanted people to show me, that they could apply the categories that I introduced in the lecture. I felt that the difference between intransitive, transitive, and ditransitive verbs is something that you can see when you look at the sample sentence, cry me a river. It wasn't the best question in the exam, unfortunately, yes. Okay, anyway. So, we've introduced... Yeah? Is listening to me. Because of the to, you mean? Yeah. Listening to me. Well, what kind of verb is listening? Do you listen? Yeah, okay. I see what you mean, yes, okay. Can you just listen without anything? In a way, not, right? You need to listen to something. If you were to paint, or if you were to draw listening, then you would probably need something that enters the ear or something like that. You're absolutely right. It has a different structure in the sense that it's a preposition phrase rather than a noun phrase. Yeah? But it's still something that is required. I'm a bit hesitant here because there are different ways of looking at this, but I don't want to complicate matters any further. But here I would just say, yes, it's something that's required, and therefore, even though formally it looks different, functionally it's the same thing. And that makes the point that I've already made. Form is one thing, function is another thing. Not every subject is a noun phrase, and not every object is a noun phrase. Yeah, it could also be a preposition phrase, yeah? For example. Right. What are these elements here? The girl stumbled is a complete sentence. The girl stumbled today. The girl stumbled in the morning. The girl stumbled gracefully. I don't know whether you can stumble gracefully, but... Okay. These are circumstantial information in all... three sentences here. We don't need it. We don't need it? Well, we've seen that we don't need it. Okay? These are adjuncts. Adjunct is a function just like subject or object, but it's a function that's not required in the sentence. Notice that a lot of students assume that anything that follows the verb is an object. That's not true. Okay. Stumbled today, today is not an object. Stumbled in the morning is not an object. Okay. In fact, you can say, the girl heard me in the morning, and that doesn't make here into a ditransitive verb. Yeah? It still is a transitive verb, but we now have an additional piece of circumstantial information. I can do this with ditransitive verbs as well. The girl gave her sister a book in the morning. How would you show this in a syntax tree? I'm not going to show you today. I'm probably not showing this to you next week. I'm still deciding because this is more advanced than first year stuff. But we'll see. Okay. Today, I would like to have a quick look at which functions can, at the correlation between form and function, basically. And then, finally, the exercise, which takes much longer than I thought it would. Okay. How can the subject be realized? Well, we've seen this as a noun phrase. This is the standard. What do we have here? That she likes chocolate is obvious. That she likes chocolate is a subject. What is it? A clause. Bas Arts, in the reading for today, mentions a few other, if I remember correctly, a few other cases. If it's not in the reading for today, then it's in the reading for next time. Under the stairs was a safe area during the war. Under the stairs, what's this? A preposition. Under the stairs is a preposition phrase. So, it's a preposition phrase functioning as subject. It's a very rare case. I recently caught one of our language teachers in the department saying one. Yes, would those people who are working on trying to access my computer via Bluetooth please stop doing so? Yes, whoever it was, you were unsuccessful. I don't allow other people to access my computer via Bluetooth. So, just stop it, please. Okay? Right. So, we have to go through this one again. But it was a nice try. How can the object be realized? Well, as a noun phrase. But we've also seen cases where it was a clause. The girl heard that I blew the whistle. That I blew the whistle is a clause functioning as object. And there are a few other less likely options that I don't even want to mention here. The point is, you can't just look at something and say it must be an object. You can only look at something in a clause, in a sentence in a tree, and then say, oh, that must be the subject or the object. Okay. It's much more common to have clauses as objects than as subjects. Finally, before you're getting too restless, how can adjuncts be realized? He cleaned the house quite cheerfully. What's this? What kind of phrase is this? What is cheerfully? An adverb. Quite cheerfully is therefore an adverb phrase. Otto cooked his evening meal in a rush. In a rush is a preposition phrase. He wants me to do it this second. Noun phrase. They will be cooking the meal when we arrive. A clause. Yeah? So, it means that there are four different, and in fact there are some more, ways of realizing adjuncts. And all of them are very frequent. So, the adjunct category is the most varied in terms of form. By the way, even old in old man is an adjunct. It's an adjective phrase. It pre-modifies man. It's a phrase. It's optional and is therefore an adjunct. So, basically, you can't tell the function of a constituent from the form. It's more likely that a noun phrase is a subject than a preposition phrase is a subject, but it could be. The only reliable approach is to look at the individual elements, where the phrase and clause boundaries are, what the participants are that are required by the verb, look at the boundaries of these participants, and then think about hierarchy. Okay. Think about the fact that some clauses may be contained in phrases which may be part of clauses, etc. And that requires practice, and here's finally the practice exercise for today. I'll give you 3 minutes or so to do this. I'd like you to find out how many clauses this sentence has, whether this is a simple or a complex sentence, and what the functions are of the elements that you have determined to be clauses and phrases. Okay? So that should keep you busy for a few minutes. Okay, are you ready? How many clauses? How many clauses? Who is in favor of one? Okay, one person. Who is in favor of two? Quite a few. Okay, who is in favor of three? A bit fewer than... okay, more than three? Okay, one. Okay. The correct answer is two. Why? Because there are two verbs, two main verbs. You just count the number of verbs. And I have a suspicion that those people who had three may have considered this as an extra clause. I'm not sure. But that's not the case. Why? Because there is no verb in it. It's just a preposition phrase. All right? Yes, you could have a clause there. After the meeting had finished, for example. No, sorry. When the meeting had finished. Let's put it like that to confuse you less. Okay? You can create clauses in this adjunct for this position. Okay. Right. Now we've got two verbs. What kind of verb is believed? Intransitive, transitive, or ditransitive? Who's in favor of intransitive? Okay, very few people. Who's in favor of transitive? Okay. Who's in favor of ditransitive? Okay, a few as well. And who doesn't care? Okay. Yes. Okay. Well, the other way to ask is, what is required by belief? I believe something. Yeah? What is the object of belief? I'm not going to ask you to sort of, to raise your hands. But could anyone give me the object of belief? Yeah? Everything after, yeah? Now, you fell into the trap of not replacing everything in the replacement test. Yeah? Because if you were to put a single word for everything here, you could say, believed that. Yeah? Or believed this. Now, in your response, you said a peace agreement between Israel and Syria. Okay, I got myself into a difficult situation here because you could actually put this could. Yeah. Okay. Yes. You see, it doesn't always work. Okay. But do you agree that you can put this and it replaces everything? Ah, okay. I'll need to find a better example. I'll need to find a better sentence. Maybe I'll come back with... I'll put a better sentence into the exercises, okay? All right. Yeah, believe this. Okay, I can give you the answer. Yes, you are right. This can replace a peace agreement between Israel and Syria. But what it then replaces is the subject in the subordinate clause. Okay? Okay. All right, it's not the best sentence, I agree. Okay. It's a clause. Okay? What's the object of the verb to herald? Well, an end to Israel's conflicts with other neighbors. Okay. What's the form of this object? A noun phrase. Yeah. Is it a simple or a complex or a compound sentence? Who's in favor of simple? Who's in favor of compound? Who's in favor of complex? And complex is the correct answer. Because it contains subordinate clauses that are embedded on a lower level and that are not coordinated on the same level. There is no and there is no or there is no but, which links two items on the same level. Okay? I'm still thinking about this here. Yes. Where does it start? Which one? There are two. The first one starts here. A peace agreement between Israel and Syria could herald an end to Israel's conflict with other Arab neighbors. Yeah? And the second one is, let me see, later. No! Gosh! Okay, 10 extra points for you. It's only one subordinate clause. Yeah, it doesn't make sense. I said there are two clauses. There can't be a second subordinate clause. Gosh, it's only week 7 and I've produced so much confusion for you. Okay. But if you follow the confusion and sort it out, then yes, ultimately, yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Yes, okay. So the clause at the beginning is also subordinate.
Which one? No. The subordinate clause is a peace agreement between Israel and Syria could herald an end to Israel's conflict with other Arab neighbors. What's the main clause?
All of it.
Yeah? The main clause is all of it. And the subordinate clause is contained inside. Okay. Gosh, this has gone wrong. But I think you can handle it. Okay. I will make this clear in the exercises. I will put exercises on SUDIP which will allow you to find subordinate clauses and main clauses, etc. Okay? Good. There's just one more thing that I would like to say, and I'll need a few minutes for that. So, and I'll make a few important points. So you need to still listen, please. Okay? Right. So far, what we've had is clauses that were pretty much typical. Namely, that we had a subject, and a predicate. For example, in the previous sentence, believed that a peace agreement, etc., is a subordinate clause with a subject and a predicate. Okay. Let's have a look at those two sentences here. The university expects its staff to know the rules. Okay? We hope to see you at the party. How many clauses do these sentences have? Two. Yeah? We've got expect and know. We've got hope and see. Yeah? These are the subordinate clauses. Expect what? Direct object, its staff, to know the rules. We hope what? To see you at the party. In both cases, what's read is a clause that functions as a direct object to a transitive verb. Okay? Now, if you look at the verb in the subordinate clause, then you will notice that it is a little bit different from the other clauses that we've seen. These verbs here are infinitives. Another wake-up call. They are with two and the infinitive. Okay. In the previous case where we had a subordinate clause, we had that, okay? Believe that, or saw that, or heard that. There is no that here. We could make it into a sentence with a that. We hope that we will see you at the party. Okay. Now, can you tell me what the subject of this subordinate clause is? What's the subject in its staff to know the rules? I heard its staff? Yeah? Okay, its staff is the subject. What's the subject here? What's the subject? Well, if you have the sentence, we hope to see you at the party, then notionally, the subject is we. Yeah? So there is some kind of we which we don't see. 10 more minutes. I need more quietness. I know it's hard, but still, please. Oh, took a while though. Okay. So what we basically have is a subordinate clause that consists only of a verb phrase. Yeah? Let's draw the tree for that, to make that clearer. This is the sentence. We start with the word classes. Noun, hope. In fact, we could do this with everything, but just to make it simple, I'll start with the main, with the important part of the main clause, namely the subject, and then the verb. Okay? This is similar to what we did last time. What do we do next? Well, to see is the verb. Let's put to see together as a verb group. Okay? You is a noun phrase. Mm-hmm. And at the party, I'm just being lazy. I put a clothes hanger, as it's called, or a triangle, because it belongs together. Okay? And I can put this together under one node, which says it's a verb phrase. Okay? Now, what I'm really missing here is something that could be or that is functioning as a subject. For example, a noun phrase. It's not there. Yeah? But in a way it's there because it's the same as the subject of the matrix clause. In fact, if we leave this out, then we're left with a fully functional sentence. If we assume that this actually is a noun phrase, and this is the verb which belongs to that verb phrase. This on its own, of course, cannot stand like that. Okay, but you can see that it's related, I think. We have a noun phrase, verb phrase structure, but the noun phrase just simply isn't there. Okay? So this is a subclause. But we have a subclause without noun phrase. Or with a subclause without subject. Okay. Let's not look at that comment with the three participants. I may do that next time. That actually happens quite often. I heard Jamie singing in the bath. Ray regrets buying a sports car. Okay. What kind of verb is this in the subordinate clause? It's an ing form. It's an ing participle. Okay. It's the same principle as we've seen before. It's again a subordinate clause without the subject. Okay. In fact, that also works for adjuncts. Okay. You can say the street's being completely deserted. Okay. And then you've got the streets, which is a subject. But you can also have a clause here without a subject. Who's standing on the table? Well, Dawn, notionally. Okay? Now I realize that the last few things that I said may have gone a little bit fast. Okay? A little bit, yes. Don't worry. I will come back to it. Okay? I will take up the different types of subclauses next time, and I will also draw a tree to make this clear. Don't pack up yet. Conclusion 2. We looked at different types of clauses, main and subordinate clauses, and in fact also coordinate compound clauses. Okay. So, this is a question of hierarchy. And in compound clauses, we've got two things on the same level of hierarchy. We looked at participants versus adjuncts. Participants meaning elements that are required by the verb that function as objects, for example, direct or indirect options. I made the point again about the difference between form and function, and towards the end I introduced a few different clause types which are different because they contain different verb forms and they contain no subject. Now, in order to get this across, I would like you to draw, for next time, a tree for this sentence. Ray regrets hitting the old man with a stick. Yeah? Be as specific as possible in the sense that I would like all the word classes, I would like to have all the phrases, I would like to have all the clauses, and I would like to have, and I would like you to have an idea of what belongs where. Okay? And as you can see, well, I can already tell you that we have regret and we have hit. We have two verbs. This is a case where we have two clauses, and again, the subordinate clause has no subject. So we'll start with that next time and then revise a few things that I said and then take it from there.